весна Карпати вкрила, журавлі вже прилетіли. Лиш свою дівчину любу ми з тобою не зустріли.
Rockabilly group from Ukraine called Madheads with a song called Smereka, which translates as spruce tree. But it's not really about a spruce tree. It's about a lady that often happens in Ukrainian folk songs and never are what they seem on the surface. Again, that was Madheads with Smereka. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам англійською мовою з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. З вами Павліна Макворі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступного дню. Ми маємо дуже цікаві новини на сьогоднішній програмі. Hello there and welcome to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you from Vancouver Island on the west coast of Canada, courtesy PCJ Radio International. I'm your host, Paulette Demchuk-McCory, Pokrinske Pavlina, and I'm delighted to have you with me. We've got a great program lined up for you. We'll be taking another look at museums in Ukraine on Ukrainian Jewish heritage, since there is quite a bit going on, and we've been talking about that quite a bit on the program, so just a bit of a refresher on museums. As well, we've got an interview with the commanding officer of the 4th Rotation of Operation Unifier, which just completed in March of this year. And this is Operation Unifier, is the Canadian Armed Forces' mission to help Ukraine in their fight against Russian aggression. So stay tuned for that. He's got some great insights into what's going on there. As well, we've got our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And coming up next is a song that was made popular originally during the Orange Revolution and has remained popular through Maidan and still now, given the current circumstances in Ukraine. This song was originally performed, I believe composed as well, by Mandre. And this version is by a duo, Lilia Bahri and Nazari Karabinovich. The song is called Не спи, моя рідна земля, Do Not Sleep, My Native Land.
Тобі скажу, де квітне дивний сад, де срібляста ніч тремтить у темних водах, у далекий край лежить нелегкий шлях, доки хижа ніч кружля по колу. Не спи, моя рідна земля, прокинься, моя Україно, відкрий свої очі у світлі далеких зірок. Це дивляться з темних небес загиблі поети й герої, всі ті, що поклали життя за майбутнє твоє. Yeah. свої очі у світ і далеких зірок. Це дивляться з темних небес загиблі поети й герої, всі ті, що поклали життя за майбутнє твоє.
Не спи, моя рідна земля.
Ой, Марічко, чи чарі, чи чарі, чи чарі, розчеши ми кучері. Кучері, кучері, розчеши ми кучері, кучері, кучері.
Я би тобі чесала, 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 як би мамка не знала, не знала, не знала, як би мамка не знала, не знала, не знала, мамка буде дивити, 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 я вся буду ганьбити, 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 я вся буду ганьбити, ганьбити, ганьбити.
Заріж мені когуття, 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 заріж мені когуття, когуття, когуття.
Ukrainian-American group by the name of Korinya, and that means roots, incidentally. And the song was about a girl, and the title matches the topic. The song is called Marichka. And now for a look at Ukraine's rich Jewish heritage, then and now, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter based in Toronto, Ontario.
Welcome to Ukrainian Jewish Heritage on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm Peter Baeger. How do you tell a story? Museums are essential places where stories about nations and cultures are told. But they are also places where the story may not be fully told. Or the story may need to be retold. There has been a global boom in new museums. There are new technologies and new ways to tell a story, especially with interactive multimedia formats. Museum visitors are no longer just passive consumers of information. This museum boom is now reaching Eastern Europe, and fresh ideas about museums are facing new challenges in rapidly changing societies in that region. History and rethinking history and retelling history is complicated in post-communist societies, controversial and often painful. Recently, the Center for Urban History of East Central Europe in Lviv tackled the issues of museums telling or not telling the story. What are the challenges that Ukrainian museums face when including Jewish history into the dominant narrative of their exhibitions? A public program called Jewish Days in the City Hall, Undisplayed Past in Eastern European Museums, featured researchers and museum experts from Ukraine, Poland, Israel, Russia, and the United States. The focus was on emerging trends in museum practices. A crucial point discussed was how to create inclusive narratives on societies with a multicultural heritage. Examples were drawn from the stories Jewish museums in Eastern Europe are now telling us. One compelling example was provided by Marcin Wodzinski. He is a historian and professor of Jewish studies at the University of Wrocław in Western Poland. His special fields of interest are Jewish material culture and the social history of Jews in 19th century Eastern Europe. Wodzinski's lecture focused on the Museum of the History of Polish Jews that was opened in Warsaw in 2014. He explained how guiding principles and considerations of history shaped the museum. He outlined how the museum emerged from public debates on the Jews and Polish-Jewish relations, both academic and popular. All this has direct relevance to Ukrainian museums now grappling with similar challenges. Wodzinski noted the proposed museum started with the advantage of having no collection. But it started with a story, a powerful story. And the story was to be a museum of Jewish life and not a memorial to a gravesite. He pointed out the museum avoided a lachrymose approach, where Jewish history is presented as only that of victims. The Jewish story is not only of suffering. The museum consulted with historians and specialists for years to develop the story it wanted to tell before opening. 1,000 years of Polish-Jewish history was divided into chapters. Museum space was parceled out to these chapters and reflected in structured galleries of exhibits. There is a narration of events guided by documents of the time. But the story told is in the voice of historians in the 21st century. Wodzinski noted that a museum does not have to be based on objects of display. A story does not come from objects, but historical artifacts bring to a museum an essential feeling of authenticity. The trick is to integrate artifacts effectively into museum space. And sometimes you learn from mistakes. One of the most challenging issues for the museum was dealing with the slippery and often changing meaning of identity. Polish Jews, like Ukrainian Jews, lived among non-Jews who were often divided for long periods by different empires, states, and ruling languages. A so-called Polish Jew living in Berlin was identified as such because he might be wearing traditional Jewish dress. Just as a so-called German Jew in the once Austrian imperial city of Lemberg, now Lviv, was called that because he wore contemporary urban clothing. The problem of identification is complex and it is difficult to categorize. Finding answers is not easy. Wodzinski was asked what advice he would offer to those creating a future museum of Ukrainian Jews. He said you would be criticized for whatever you choose. But he stressed that what the Polish museum was trying to get done was not choosing the least controversial approach. On the contrary, they are showing the problem of definition. Wodzinski underlined that there are difficult choices, but they are all the more fascinating to study and present. People are not made by one choice, he reminded us. People break identities, refrain from an identity, and change identities. For this very reason, Wodzinski believes the Museum of Ukrainian Jews could be a fascinating story. From all this, we can conclude, as Wodzinski's lecture at the Chapter for Urban History stated, that modern museums are, quote, mirrors carried along the high road, unquote. And just like novels, They reflect the ways contemporary individuals and societies see themselves and how they portray each other. And as times change, the mirror changes, as do those who look into the mirror to see themselves. This has been Ukrainian Jewish Heritage on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. From San Francisco, I'm Peter Baker. Until next time, shalom.
Ukrainian Jewish Heritage is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter, based in Toronto, Ontario. To find out more about their work, visit their website and follow them on Facebook and Twitter. Transcripts and audio files of this and earlier broadcasts of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage are available at their website, ukrainianjewishencounter.org, as well as at the Nash Holos website, www.nashholos.com. Вислухайте радіопередачу «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio. Говорить Павліна. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you courtesy PCJ Radio International. I'm your host, Павліна.
Cossack, lead us all to victory. God be with you. Live, Cossack, love, Cossack. Touch your spirit, must be free. Cossack, be, Cossack. Freedom is for you and me. We are brothers for eternity. Now, the Cossack is just a story, but his legend lives on. Oh, the glory, what he lived and died for. So no more he'd be a slave. Do what I don't. That Cossack has to die, then let him find his glory. Need the sky so you can hear of how and why he had to die that way. There was nothing as too high a price to pay. He still lives on the hearts of men today. So won't you fly, Cossack, try, Cossack. It's the sticks and starters, go, Cossack, show, Cossack. That is why your heart is beating. Cossack, free, Cossack, lead us all to victory. God be with you, live, Cossack, love, Cossack. Such a spirit must be free. Cossack, be, Cossack. Freedom is for you and me. We are brothers for eternity.
Cossack, hey, hey! And the inimitable Ron Kahoot and Buria with a classic song that he composed and probably is, maybe you could call it their signature tune. Certainly it is a classic, and it is called Fly Cossack by Ron Kahoot and Buria. Up next is another rockabilly band from Ukraine. They are called Otvinta, and here they are with Nashi Chlopsi na Vini. Our boys going to war.
Ровистар чередних олепехи, суші сива стояних реп'яхи, посип хати ще кімнату під мети. І в дорозі, на порозі вже свати.
Наші хлопці на війні, та ліки на виданні. Гей, гей!
були, пролетіли Україну з краю в край. Кого хочеш, то я не хови. Хороший урожай. Не страшні ми, гради, танки, літаки. Переможці, побратими, парубки.
Наші хлопці на війні, а ліки на виданні. Гей, гей,
не біда,
зачекає
молода.
Хай ще трохи підросте,
хай ще трохи підросте. За героя віддасте.
Головна мета Ukraine War Amps – це допомога пораненим воїнам та патріотам, які захищають свободу своєї країни у сьогоднішній війні за Україну. Ukraine War Amps представляє програму «Всинови солдата». З вашою підтримкою наша організація зможе передавати принаймні $50 США щомісяця для цільової підтримки якомога більшого числа українських героїв. 100% зібраних коштів буде передано напряму героям, пораненим у війні за Україну. Програма «Всинови солдата» будує унікальний зв'язок між вами і солдатом, якого ви підтримуєте. Все починається з вас. Візьміть під опіку солдата. Підтримайте героя України.
Lieutenant Colonel Chris Reeves was born and raised on Cape Breton Island. He enrolled in the Canadian Armed Forces in 1996 and graduated from the Royal Military College in 2001 with a degree in business administration. He also holds a master's degree in defense studies. Lieutenant Colonel Reeves has been deployed at home and abroad, including in the United Kingdom and the United States. He did 2 tours in Afghanistan and most recently was deployed as the Task Force Commander for Operation Unifier in Ukraine from September 2017 to March 2019. Lieutenant Colonel Reeves has kindly taken time out of his busy schedule to tell us about his experience in Ukraine and what Operation Unifier is all about. So thank you, Colonel Reeves, for spending time with us and welcome to the show.
Дуже приємно, my pleasure. Добрий день.
Thank you. And it's nice that you speak Ukrainian, so I understand that you've discovered some roots.
We have, yeah. I mean, I think maybe we could get into that a little bit later, but certainly preparing for the mission, I realized that I do have some Ukrainian roots, and I was able to explore that while I was deployed.
Well, being a Canadian, that most people do have find some Ukrainian roots somewhere or another.
I think they do, whether by blood or by choice.
Exactly. So Nash Hall's listeners are certainly aware of the conflict in Ukraine. And this is, of course, the warlike situation caused by ongoing aggression from neighboring Russia since 2014. And they're also aware, if only vaguely, that the Canadian Armed Forces has been providing considerable military assistance since shortly after hostilities began. And it's, I recall it was a bit of a contentious issue, Colonel Reeves, with some members of the Ukrainian community, and myself a little bit, I have to admit, that the focus was on non-lethal assistance as opposed to lethal assistance. Mm-hmm. So can you give us, first of all, I guess a two-part question. Can you give us a brief overview of Operation Unifier and also mm-hmm. why it chose this route?
So Operation Unifier is Canada's contribution. In fact, it's the military contribution to a larger set of aid that we do provide Ukraine. It's truly a partnership. And the military piece that we do is a training mission. And so what we're trying to do is work with Ukrainians every day across all of their armed forces, Army, Navy, Air Force, even special operations. And we work, train, teach, mentor, coach Ukrainian officers, senior non-commissioned officers and soldiers daily. And so we've established a set of goals together that we want to get to. But really, at the end of the day, we're there in a non-lethal capacity. So we're back from the front lines, helping Ukraine's military achieve its goals for capability and for reform.
Okay. So I guess that brought the notion to my mind that mm-hmm. if you had actually gone there and provided lethal equipment and went to battle, that's a declaration of war. And that's pretty scary stuff.
Well, it's definitely, I would say, strategically complicated, that's for sure. I think what gets wrapped up into the lethal versus non-lethal debate was, okay, there's Canada's response, and then out of that response is, okay, what's our own Canadian military's role going to be there? And so between, I would say, discussions, potentially negotiations between the two governments, it was deemed that, at least for the Canadian Armed Forces, our best role was to help train. And I think that's because Ukraine was taking a very long-term view. They were able to, you know, with considerable loss, certainly, but they were able to stem the advance of Russian aggression in the East on their own with some help. Mm-hmm. And now I think they were looking beyond those initial first couple of years to how do they become more powerful as a military? How do they become more like NATO? And Canada signed on for a long-term partnership. And so, again, I think lethal aid and non-lethal aid kind of worked into those strategic conversations. Mm-hmm. But as a military officer, my orders were to go there and provide the best training I could. And we certainly did that.
Yes. So you went in September. How long do the deployments last?
So our deployments are generally about 6 months long.
Okay.
And that might seem a bit short, but you have to remember that for us to do the best job that we can while we're there, mm-hmm. we do at least 6 months of training prior to deploying to Ukraine.
Oh, wow.
And that's making sure our own skills are where they need to be, building our teams from their previous tasks, mm-hmm. rebuilding those teams. And then we add a real heavy dose of cultural learning and understanding. We start working with language assistants, trying to understand the language ourselves. And then really figuring out, okay, mm-hmm. where's Ukraine's military right now? Mm-hmm. Because I think anybody who's ever done any teaching or coaching, you have to know your partners or your students or your teammates, you know, intimately to mm-hmm. do the best job you can. So we spend a good amount of time getting ready. And then we deploy working nearly 24 hours a day for 6 months while we're there. And then, you know, the Ukrainian teams move through our training centers and then back to the front lines. So they're certainly... they don't have it any easier than we do, that's for sure, and it's quite a bit harder. But we do put a lot of effort into that year-long commitment, and then we tag off and hand it over to another group of Canadians.
I see. So that's why there are four rounds?
That's right, four rotations,
four
we call
rotations,
them. Yeah.
Right,
and,
okay.
And now we're on to our fifth rotation now. I commanded rotation four, which was really interesting. We inherited two training sites, and over time and support of the Canadian government and also the Ukrainian community in Canada, support lobbying with our own folks, there was a lot of interest and support generated. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to move out into 8 new locations around Ukraine. And we had people working at the general staff level, working with generals, and we had soldiers working with soldiers down at the soldier level and everywhere in between. So quite fascinating. We got to see a lot of the countryside. Worked in a lot of locations and actually made some lifelong friends.
So where were the locations? Where did you go?
Well, we started originally in Lviv, which I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with that part of Western Ukraine.
Oh,
beautiful,
yeah.
Gorgeous city.
Mm-hmm.
And often, I would be honest with you, when you're in Lviv, you wonder, where's the war? because it's very different from what's happening in the East in Donbass.
Yeah.
And also very different from the cultural pressures and oppression, really, that's happening in Crimea. So Lviv is beautiful, but at the same time, we are reminded daily that there is a major war going on in the East, and the soldiers that we're training either come straight out of the East or they're going right back into the fight.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked there. We also had elements down in the South towards Kamianets-Podolsky, doing some engineering training, beautiful area down there as well. But really, by the end of our rotation, we moved out into all these other locations, some Russian-speaking, some central Ukraine, in Odessa, up to Kharkiv, Desna, which is north of Kyiv, and a lot of places in between, a lot of neat little towns, including even my grandfather's hometown.
Which was that?
Well, there's a little town called Khorotskiv, which is in Ternopil Oblast. And that's, as I found out while I was there, where my roots come from.
Khorotskiv. Okay, well, my maternal grandparents come from Khorodinka, so it sounds like probably we're neighbors. Or who knows, we might be related distantly.
Even better.
So you were at these eight different locations. And so how big was, how many people did you command?
We had about 250 to 270 Canadian soldiers in Ukraine, which may seem like not a large number given the size of the Ukrainian military. But these are all senior instructors, senior sergeants, officers, and all strategically placed in the different training systems to be able to provide mentorship. So, you know, we were coming in contact with thousands of Ukrainian soldiers monthly, and we were doing some pretty interesting things, like we were working on very discrete skills like counter improvised explosive disposal. We were working on sniper training, but we were also working on things like decision making, on how to move large formations of forces around the country, helping to mentor how artillery and tanks and armor and aircraft work together. So we're really working the whole gamut. Paulina, also towards the end of the mission, we were asked to move into the military academies. So we had officers and senior non-commissioned officers that were helping with the professors at the military academies teach the young Ukrainian officers, helping them with their initial education. And that's something we're quite proud of, actually. We would have a Canadian posted at the military academy when that young officer is just recruited. Then we would see that officer again when he goes and assumes command of his first or her first, say, reconnaissance platoon. And then a couple years later, they'll run into Canadians at the maneuver training center. And so that kind of helps to reinforce the NATO lessons. And so we're not just seeing them in one spot. We're seeing them all along their career path. And that's kind of the model in NATO, where we interact with our partners in NATO at all different rank levels. And we're trying to work with the Ukrainians in the same methodology.
Wow. So you noticed changes then in how the Ukrainian military then operated. What were some of the things that surprised you that were different? It was surprisingly different to you.
Well, I think one thing that did surprise me was there's still, and the Ukrainian folks will tell you this, you know, the post-Soviet mentality is very much entrenched in the Ukrainian military. They're still struggling with not delegating down decision making. They struggle with what we call in the army stovepipe decision making. They do have a lot of challenges with technology, incorporating technology into the force. But I would say on the positive side, Ukraine's military today is unrecognizable from 2014.
Really?
It is incredibly more powerful, very, very well kitted out when it comes to uniforms. Lots of young soldiers and officers who want to make a difference, who have kind of taken that spark from Maidan and turned it into a torch. Young Ukrainian soldiers are some of the most technologically savvy soldiers I've ever met in my career. So when you get that raw material there, it's very energizing, very exciting. You can tell I'm ready to go back at any time and work with them.
I can hear that in your voice. Sure.
And so we you know, that's quite great in a sense. So challenging, yes, post-Soviet model, and they're trying to get rid of it. But, you know, you can't turn a big ship like the Ukrainian military around overnight. It does take a long time.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they faced years and years of underinvestment, which your listeners would know better than me. Many of them I know probably grew up in Soviet times in Ukraine.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's still there, but very, very capable military right now. And so much so, Paulina, I would say, one of the other successes from the mission was we convinced the Canadian Army to allow one of my platoons from Canada to fly over and be trained alongside the Ukrainians. So this platoon wasn't, this platoon wasn't doing the training. They were there to be trained. And, you know, part of it was what we call mentoring through modeling. So they would show how a Canadian infantry platoon would accomplish tasks and how they would do work and the business of the profession of arms. But, you know, their boss on the training exercise was a Ukrainian commander. And talk about, you know, the message getting out there that we were serious from a point of view of being true partners. If you want to believe in your product, then, you know, you kind of put your own your own troops through it.
Yeah,
so that platoon was really, really great bunch of men and women to talk to now that we're all back in Canada. And we're trying to get them to share their experience with the rest of us here in Petawawa.
Wow, that is interesting. Actually, I recall just reading something, there's a quick headline somewhere on social media about Canadians learning. It was not a one-way kind of thing. It was definitely of mutual benefit to both armies.
That's right, Paulina. It really is a two-way street. Ukraine is on the front lines of what we call hybrid warfare with Russia.
Right.
And so the way that country, that aggressive country is doing everything it can to kind of undermine the nationhood of Ukraine, you know, the Ukrainian armed forces are seeing that every day. In fact, all of the Ukrainian government. So for us to participate and understand how they're doing as well as they're doing in that environment, we can't help but learn from them. And so it is a two-way street. We learn from the Ukrainian army as much as they learn from us.
It's encouraging to hear that you see a vast improvement because, you know,
I've been
hearing stories right from 2013, 2014 about corruption in the military. Well, and before, of course, about corruption in the military and a lot of, you know, the clothing, for example, and goggles and things that we sent didn't all make it to the people that it was intended for. Ended up on the black market and that kind of thing. So you saw a reduction in the corruption levels in the militaries?
That is a tough question that, you know, to answer. I think it's because, I mean, if I saw corruption and there was something I could do about it, then I would act on that.
Right.
I've heard it enough times that I have to believe that there is corruption in the Ukrainian military. But I also think there is a lot of inefficiency. And that, again, goes back to just how they're structured and how under-resourced they are. And so that inefficiency, that's a real challenge that they're working on.
Yeah. Contributing factor as well, probably,
really
to it. Yeah.
You know, because the international community wants to just, I hate to use the cliche, but I will. The international community wants to give all the fish it needs to the Ukrainian military. But what we really need to do is teach them how to fish.
Yeah.
And so we want our aid to go right to the front lines, of course, because we want to save lives and we want the Ukrainian military to be ultimately effective on the battlefield. But in the long-term view, it's a lot harder to change the entire system in there. And that's really what Canada's mission is focused on, is long-term reform, cognizant of the fight that's happening, but we do have to take a long-term view of things. And so it does come down to an operation of, you know, incremental gains, but we did see a lot of progress. Yeah, we sure did.
Now, the Operation Unifier was originally, I think, scheduled to go through until 2017, but then it was extended. And it's now we're looking at 2019 for the end of the operation? Or is that, again, kind of just a goalpost that might be moved?
Well, officially, the government mandate does expire in March 19. And, you know, as a soldier, that is what I understand to be the end date. But I also know, you know, as an educated Canadian and also an agent of the government, that there is a process of renewal. So I would imagine over the summer and into the fall, government will review all of the missions that we have that are coming up for renewal or review. And then, you know, I think with the right conditions, it would be renewed. But that's not something I could comment on.
Sure.
So what we try to do is we plan as if the mission will be renewed so that we have an understanding of where we're trying to get to.
Ah.
But we only make commitments up to the end of the government mandate because that is the rules.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that is certainly encouraging. We all kind of hope that the war will end by then. That would be really good.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you served for 6 months in Ukraine and you just finished. Mm-hmm. You just got home.
Yeah.
I want to go back already.
Yeah.
And
we do. And I hope the next time I go back, if I don't go back in a military capacity, I'll be able to bring my family with me.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Now, you, speaking of which, they have Ukrainian roots because you do. Tell us a little bit about that. Must have been useful, I guess, when you were training to go over.
Yeah, it was. Once I was identified to command the mission, I started to remember, hey, I grew up eating vareniki and cabbage rolls and kielbasa, and I remember, you know, some very great dancers and in Cape Breton, yet, but didn't really grow up Ukrainian, well, what I remember.
Okay, but this was going on in Cape Breton Island? Serious?
Yeah, yeah. We have a real multicultural community in Cape Breton, especially in the industrial heart of the island, in Sydney, and it's particularly a place called Whitney Pier, surrounded by the coal mines and the steel plant down there.
Huh.
And so that's where I grew up, and before I went over, I did some digging, and I had located my grandfather's birth certificates and great-grandfather's marriage certificates, and I realized it was all written in Polish, so I wasn't quite sure how things were going to work. But I brought it all with me anyway, and a couple of weeks into the mission, I was able to sit down with some of my team, and we translated it all. And of course, a big chunk of Ukraine back in the days when my grandfather immigrated was all Galicia. Yeah. It was all part of Poland at the time.
Yeah.
And so we realized that my grandfather's hometown was a mere 200 kilometers from my main camp on the way to another camp. So we jumped in our vehicles and we went down and did a surprise cold call to the mayor and his team in that little town, Horoskiv.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, knocked on the door, told them who I was, and they kind of looked at me a little weird. And then so kind of told my story or what I knew of it. And then after a little while, I got the impression that everybody was really busy and had to get back to work. So, and probably I did as well. And so I asked, you know, okay, what's happening now? And they said, well, we're calling the Volodkas, and which is my grandfather's last name. And I said, oh, okay, well, which one? And they said, all of them.
Oh.
And I guess there was like hundreds in that region. So they were checking church records and phone books, trying to see if anybody knew anything about my family. Yeah, it was really neat. But what was really cool was the mayor invited me into his office, and they were asking me for more information. So I said, well, you're really starting to stump me. Maybe we could just call Grandpa right now. So we called him. He's 94 years old. I said, Grandpa, I'm here. He's like, Christopher, where are you? I'm like, well, I'm in Khrotskiv. I'm in your hometown in Ukraine. He's like, where? And we have him on speakerphone. And he starts, Paulina, to remember the memories of him growing up. And he said, well, okay, well, you know, mom lived on one side of the secret river and his dad lived on the other side and his uncle was in the gendarmerie and the police force. And then there wasn't really a dry eye in the room at that point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really neat. And it only gets better.
Yeah, so precious memory. Ah.
Well, and as it turned out, the town really embraced that. So about 3 weeks later, we were able to conduct a visit with about 55 of our troops, and we went down and spent a weekend with that town. It was Cossack Day, so any day of the Defender in October.
Oh, wow.
We had a great cultural exposition. We played soccer against some of the vets from the front that were home on leave. The whole task force went to church together. It was really, really neat. Really neat. And it set the tone for the rest of the mission, for sure.
Yeah. So you want to go back. What would be the likelihood that you would go back to serve another tour there?
I would definitely go back to serve. Absolutely would go back to serve if I could. I'd like to see a point in the future where Ukrainian soldiers are coming to Canada regularly to train, that Canada is going to Ukraine regular to train, and that we serve alongside together on international missions around the world. I would love to see that. That would mean that the war in Donbass is over and the Ukrainian military is able to focus on international efforts. So there's quite a few things that would have to happen at that point, but definitely I would like to see that in the future.
Oh, well, let's hope that it does happen soon and you do see that.
Mm.
And we see it too. Yep. So Thank you so much for sharing your experiences, and hope you do get back to go back, and hope our paths can cross sometimes too. Thank you so much again, Colonel Reeves.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's been my honor.
Lieutenant Colonel Chris Reeves, the commanding officer of the 4th Rotation of Operation Unifier, the Canadian Armed Forces mission to support the armed forces of Ukraine defending against Russian aggression in eastern Ukraine. That rotation ended in March 2018, with Colonel Reeves and his team returning home to Petawawa. We spoke on May 1st, 2018. Вислухайте радіопрограму «Наш голос» радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, говорить Павліна. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio on PCJ Radio International. I'm your host, Павліна.
Гей, там на горі Січі йде, гей, там на горі Січі йде, гей, там на горі наше товариство, гей, марширує, раз, два, три. Гей, там на горі Січі йде, гей, малиновий стяг несе, гей, малиновий наше товариство, гей, марширує, раз, два, три. Гей, попереду кошовий, гей, як той орел степовий, гей, як той орел наше товариство, гей, марширує, раз, два, три. Гей, атамане, батьку наш, гей, веди, батьку, вперед нас. Гей, веди, батьку, наше товариство, гей, марширує, раз, два, три. Гей, наше січе дорога, гей, як та мати всім одна. Гей, як та мати наше товариство, гей, марширує, раз, два, три. Гей, дай нам силу, відвагу, гей, Україні на славу. Гей, Україні, наше товариство, гей, марширує, раз, два, три. Гей, там на горі Січі йде, гей, там на горі Січі йде, гей, там на горі наше товариство, гей, марширує, раз, два, три. Гей, марширує, раз, два, три.
And from a recording made back in 2001 from a CD called Hey Vedno Selo. The group is Luhansky Kozaky, young Cossacks from Luhansk, and a song from World War I era, which sadly still is relevant to their homeland right now. Hey Tam Nahori Sichi there, on the hill, a battalion marches. For the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio here on the PCJ Radio International Network on AM, FM, shortwave, and satellite radio. If you miss the live radio transmission of the show, you can get the podcast links at our website, www.nashholos.com. So please do visit us there in between broadcasts, as well as on our Facebook page and Twitter. There's also a link there to our Patreon site, and I hope you'll consider following and engaging with me there, as well as supporting the show by following our page or becoming a patron. Incidentally, you can also support the show at no cost to you through the Amazon links found at the Nash Holos website. Again, that's www.nashholos.com. I love hearing from you, so please send your suggestions, dedications, and requests. Your comments are always welcome. Ніж ми вже скінчили нашу програму, вже час додому і сказати до побачення. Але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Хто зло в своєму житті робить, то не тільки собі, а й народові своєму шкодить. And our proverb of the week translates as whoever does evil hurts not only himself, but also his nation. And with that, we've come to the end of our program. So to wrap things up, we have from Newfoundland, the Kubasonics and Honey Viter. I'm Pavlina. On behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio International, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, do побачення.